This is Robotic Disclosure, the podcast that reveals everything you want to know about robotic surgery, robotic technology, and how to run a best practice program for your hospital, your surgeons, and your patients. I'm your host, Josh Feldstein. Support for Robotic Disclosure comes from Kava Robotics International, the leader in robotic program consulting, serving hospitals in the U.S. and around the world. Visit kava-robotics.com. Today, we're speaking with Anthony Fernando, the Chief Operating and Technology Officer at Transenterix. He'll be talking to us about the Senhance Digital Laparoscopy System. What's interesting about the technology is the way in which it complements the overall robotic offering. Mr. Fernando has 15 years of experience driving global business growth through innovation for healthcare companies. And prior to his time with Transenterix, he was Vice President of Innovation and Technology within the international group at Stryker Corporation. Anthony, it's great to have you today.
Thank you, Josh. Glad to be here.
We have a lot to talk about. The Senhance Digital Laparoscopy System is something that many people are interested in learning more about. Can you give us an overview, Anthony, of the technology?
Sure, Josh. So I think when we talk about the Senhance Digital Laparoscopy System, you know, we believe that our system complements the robotic offering for many hospitals. As you know, the robotics market have been dominated by one robot for almost 20 years, and we were the second robot to enter the market. And the reason why we believe we complement is, I think there's a need to right-size robotics in the marketplace. And we believe that given our product offering, that we're in a position to do that. And the primary, one of the primary drivers is the cost per procedure. We have significantly lower cost per procedure because we have reusable instruments. We don't count how many times the instrument is used. It's, again, very similar to laparoscopy. It's through inspection and satisfaction to the surgical staff. They continue to use the instruments. They're very familiar because they are almost identical to standard laparoscopic instruments. Majority of our instruments are standard 5-millimeter instruments, and then we also have 3-millimeter, which is a smaller instruments. Some of the unique features to our digital laparoscopic platform is eye tracking, where the surgeon is able to control the camera using his or her eyes. With the gaze of an eye, the surgeon is able to move the camera. So instead of just only using your left and right hand to control instruments, you can actually manipulate a third robotic arm that holds the camera simultaneously. So that's a big benefit to most surgeons. Also, haptic feedback. We are the first in this category to offer haptic feedback. So the surgeon, even though they're sitting behind a machine or robotic interface, they can feel what the instrument is feeling in real time. So I think those are some of the features I would say that are applicable and kind of give us differentiation. And also, given that we're using a laparoscopic technique and instrument set, we have very broad applicability in terms of procedures. I mean, in the very first year we were on the market, we were able to do, you know, 30 plus different types of procedures. So as a result, it's given the similarity of lap, it's pretty flexible that way. So, I mean, we are pretty excited with what we have and hoping to gain further traction in terms of procedures and usage.
Anthony, can you give us a little oversight in terms of the training process that a surgeon needs to go through to become comfortable with the Senhance system?
So currently, primarily we work with trained, experienced laparoscopists. For a typical training program, is approximately 2 to 2.5 days, where we provide an overview of the system, all the different technology aspects of it, features, and we not only train the surgeon, but we also like in at the same time to train the surgical staff and the surgical assistant who works with the surgeon, so they're familiar with the system, and you get support bedside and also at the console. You know, that's one aspect of training, and then immediately after we also do a wet lab, what we call an animal lab, where the surgeon gets time on tissue to be able to do certain exercises to make sure the surgeon's comfortable with the system. And pretty much that, I mean, it's a pretty short 2 to 2.5 day process, and the surgeon goes back to using the system after that.
Can you describe a little bit about the Senhance's footprint? It appears that there are a number of units that are involved. How does that affect case complexity, if at all, Anthony?
I think it simplifies the complexity. Yes, I agree. The footprint, it appears large. But when you put it in an OR, the most important space is the sterile field. And given the arms that are more like boom arms that come over and above and comes down, there's plenty of space around the patient for whether it's a circulator or multiple folks in the assistant or even a second surgeon to be by the patient. So there's good access to the patient, and we feel that we don't occupy the more critical space, that being the space around the patient. So I agree with you, Josh, that it appears large, but I think it serves the purpose very well.
Thank you for the clarification. Along that same line, another question that maybe you can clarify for us is that when we look at docking multiple units, each with a base that needs to be moved from all sides of the patient, does this impact task complexity or efficiency or not? How would you address that?
I think you don't, because, I mean, again, all the, arms, all the four manipulators are identical, and we don't have to move it from side to side, because there's enough reach, even if you need to approach the patient from one side, the arms have the reach to do that. That's one aspect of it. The second aspect is we don't dock to the patient, so we use standard laparoscopic trocars that's been around for many years. So we can very simply take the instrument out and move the arm around if we need to move it, and just put it back, put the instrument back in, and very quickly get up and running. So moving instruments around, moving the patient, changing instruments, these are relatively simple. The way the product is designed, it lends itself very well to and gives us the staff and in the OR and the surgeons the flexibility to move things around if they need to.
Can you speak a little bit about the thinner instrumentation, the 3-millimeter instrument, for example? Can you give us some insight in terms of its design and how that's applied?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, we are the first to really introduce 3-millimeter instruments, and we have a full suite of instruments in monopolar, bipolar, and passive. Again, currently, majority of the laparoscopic procedures are done using 5-millimeter instruments, while the current robotic system uses 8-millimeter. So we've kind of stuck to 5, and now we've gone down to 3. The benefit of using 3-millimeter instruments is it causes less incision trauma, and also the incision size is relatively small. So if you can think of a scenario where you're using 3-millimeter instruments coupled with a 5-millimeter camera or an endoscope, now it can be truly minimally invasive procedure Especially, I mean, we've done some gynecology procedures and also some hernia repair, general surgery procedures, and we can very effectively perform these with very little invasiveness and scarring after the procedure.
The system is being used both in the United States and in Europe now, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. We recently received approval in Japan as well, and I'm sure you know, but you know, Japan's the second largest robotics market in the world, and we about in early July we got approval in Japan, and then a few weeks ago we were able to obtain reimbursement in Japan as well. So that'll be the third big geography that we will be going after.
There's going to be a lot of work, no question about that. Can you give us some perspective, Anthony, on the views of surgeons and administrators, U.S., Europe, Asia, relative to the Senhance laparoscopic system? Are they seeing the system differently in different countries?
I think I would think so. I think you know, most of the countries outside the U.S. have been very cost conscious when it comes to procedures, and certain hospitals even have set internal upper bounds for the number of procedures that they would like to do using a robotic system within the department or within the hospital in order to contain cost. So when we've spoken to them, there's definitely a very strong interest because of the cost per procedure. And then, you know, we kind of have to explain, you know, how we are different in terms of cost and the benefit to the hospital. Because, you know, when a hospital has a robot already, it becomes a much easier conversation for us rather than a hospital that doesn't have a conversation. But if they are already a laparoscopic major, they have enough volume in laparoscopy, then again, it becomes easier for us to talk to them because we are not asking them to change their technique, but rather we are digitizing their technique. So in you know, different geographies, as I would say, the approach and the demand and what carries higher value is slightly different, so we kind of have to cater to that.
Do you find that the conversation pivots on the reduction of direct instrument cost? In other words, removing the reposable cost from the current Da Vinci technology and thinking just in terms of reusable instruments, as you had mentioned?
Yeah, it is. I would say it's a big driver, and it's a key decision point for most hospitals. And you know, and in Europe, as you know, they have an environmental concern as well. So I think given creating less waste, that's also, you know, taken into consideration in some hospitals.
So as you continue to talk more about the Senhance digital lap system, do you find that your first level of conversation is with administrators, or do you find that it's surgeons who are coming to learn more, and they in turn go back to administration to speak with them?
Yeah, I mean, typically we start with the surgeons because I think it's important to make sure that a clinical program can be put together using Senhance, because the surgeons have to be convinced that they can take their manual laparoscopy volume and start performing that same procedure using the Senhance system. So we start with the surgeons, get support from the surgeons, but in parallel, administration comes into the conversation soon after.
Typically, which service lines do you think make the most sense for institutions to look at first when they consider Senhance?
I think so. We have very broad applicability. I think you know, general surgery, and I would say general surgery and gynecology are two broad specialties that have really good applicability, and you don't have to pick and choose saying, okay, this is a high reimbursed procedure, therefore we can consider using a robot. I mean, that you don't have to ask that question given the cost profile, the per procedure cost profile. You know, you can pretty much justify doing most of your everyday procedures using Senhance because it doesn't hurt the economics of the hospital.
Let's talk a little bit about learning curve. So after the surgeon has gone through the 2 or 2.5 day introductory phase, what is typically the learning curve in your experience, Anthony, relative to getting to a point of steady state relative to in technology usage?
What we've seen, Josh, is, you know, probably after about 5 or 6 procedures, proctored procedures, the surgeons are pretty comfortable doing their own cases. And I would say maybe when they get to about 20, somewhere in the low 20s, they really hit their stride and they are able to most of the time get very close to or even be at their lap times in terms of the case duration. So I think the first 5 proctored, they kind of get familiar with the system in use, and then when they get to about 20, they are kind of on their own, doing really well.
That's very interesting. That's a faster learning curve, as you are probably well aware. And I guess one of the other questions is adaptation to the 3D vision involves glasses. And one question is, it's a very interesting looking technology, obviously. How do you find the surgeons respond to the glasses, Anthony? And when they are not looking at the screen, for example, looking at a patient from the surgeon console, does that in any way affect or distort their vision? How do they adapt to that? I'm curious.
So it doesn't distort normal vision. I mean, just basically, if you think about 3D glasses, they're basically polarized. Polarized glasses, where the left and right are polarized slightly differently. So when they can look anywhere with the glasses on, and it behaves like a glass with slight tint in it. But it doesn't distort any image. So when they look at the monitor, they can see the 3D image because it's the 2 layers of the image get transmitted to the monitor. But when they look away, look at the OR, look at the patient, they see normal vision. There's no interruption or any distortion of that vision.
Haptic feedback. Let's talk a little bit more about that. You mentioned that at the beginning. Describe to me the technology and what the surgeon experiences, please.
So what we're doing is we are measuring the forces that the instrument is experiencing inside the patient. And then we translate that and communicate that to the handles of the surgeon console and mimic that. So if the instrument tip is touching something and putting force on the instrument, then we reflect that and we make sure the surgeon feels that same force. So it's more of a, you know, kind of a force feedback system. So most of the forces felt by the tip of the instrument are communicated back to the surgeon because the handles, if the instrument tip has some resistance, then the surgeon would also feel that resistance in the handle in trying to mimic. I mean, it's when you do standard laparoscopy, traditional laparoscopy without using any robotic technology, you would get that sense. So we, given our digital laparoscopy platform, we are trying to provide that same sense of touch back to the surgeon without taking that away.
And I guess a parallel question to that has to do with ergonomics. How would you describe the comparison of ergonomics to traditional lap and or robotics? I know you don't want to necessarily compare, but I'm just curious. It's an obvious question. Ergonomically, is it similar?
I mean, compared to laparoscopy, it's a huge benefit because I think if you've seen laparoscopy, it's, I mean, the surgeon has to be in a standing position and the arms, in very odd positions, and where your wrists and elbows are, way above your waistline for several hours at times, depending on the procedure. So the fact that you can sit comfortably instead of standing with your elbows up in the air, sit comfortably, rest your elbows, and be able to perform the surgery, I think it's a pretty big advantage ergonomically, I think, for shoulders, backs, etc., especially for lap surgeons. It's a big benefit compared to traditional laparoscopy.
That's very helpful insight. We haven't talked at all about any type of advanced instrumentation, energy devices or staplers or anything. Is there anything that we should be thinking about in the context of this discussion today?
Yeah. So currently we do have an ultrasonic energy device on the Senhance platform. We launched it in the U.S. Early part of this year, and we've had it in Europe since last year. So that's the only advanced energy modality that we offer today. And I mean, as the platform grows and gets further adoption, I mean, yeah, our intent is to expand into different energy modalities, stapling, like you mentioned. I mean, those are things of interest. But currently what we have on the market is an ultrasonic energy device.
We've been speaking today with Anthony Fernando, the Chief Operating and Technology Officer at Transenterix. You've been listening to Robotic Disclosure. Support for Robotic Disclosure comes from Kava Robotics International, the leader in robotic program consulting, serving hospitals in the U.S. and around the world. Visit kava-robotics.com. Robotic Disclosure is produced at Northfire Recording Studios in Amherst, Massachusetts. Theme music by the Verve Jazz Ensemble, verve-jazz.com.